Magnus invited me to a camp. He was trying to build a team, you know, for his match against Anand.
Lovan, why did he want you to be in the team?
He asked me to help for the match. I had already an experience before in 2008 with Kramnik.
So you think there is a big influence with working with Kramnik, yeah?
When you are checking lines with Kramnik, it's not only about opening. It's about middle game and sometimes, of course, about end game. There he asked me to help him and everything went wrong there.
Lovan, when you say everything went wrong, you mean not just chess-wise, right?
When the match was getting closer and closer, he became, you know, like very nervous. He would complain.
He looks at me like, but you know, Kasparov once told me that when it's unclear, it means that not enough work was done.
Wow.
Wow, really?
We didn't know what he was going to play. It was all very weird, I think. Magnus would never do that.
But how did it happen that you didn't know what he was going to play?
Yeah, he was that shy.
Champions, our guest today is a true heavyweight in the world of chess. He's a two-time French champion, crossed the Elite 2700 mark at his peak and has been ranked in the world's top 20. But beyond his own success, he was also part of Vladimir Kramnik's and Magnus Carlsen's teams during their world championship matches. So it's going to be a very interesting episode with lots of stories and takeaways. Please welcome Grandmaster Laurent Frazinet.
Laurent, thank you very much for accepting the invitation and coming to Chessmode Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me, and I am looking forward to the episode.
Lovan, my first question, where is it?
Where is it?
Yes.
Where I am?
No, where is it? Where is your rating?
where is my rating? Oh, okay,
you were 2700, and like, oh, it's a little bit below 26. What's this? Where it has gone.
This is the first time actually I am under 2600 for the last 20 years. So this is a bit of a shock, obviously. But yeah, it's tough. Young players, you know. Last European Championship, I played European Championship in 2024. I was playing people who were the same age as my daughter. So I felt, you know, they were born in 2007, 2008, 2006, all of them, basically. So I felt,
How old is your daughter?
She's 18. So, 18. I mean, I have two daughters, but one of them is just turned 18 in January. So she's born in 2007. Uh-huh. So basically, I was playing against my kids, you know, in this European Championship. So it's tough. But, you know, when you see Ivanchuk with barely over 2600, I mean, such a legend of the game. And it's tough. It's tough, but I like to play still. So I'm playing some events, and we'll see how it goes. A couple of years ago, I was 2650. So I really had a... we will see if in 2024, basically, I lost 50, I think, points. So let's see if it was a bad year or if it was a start of a big decline. I hope it was really, you know, you have sometimes just bad period and everything is going wrong and you are playing bad, you are a bit unlucky and so on. And in some period, you know, you are playing just a bit better, you are more lucky. So I hope 2025 will be better. I played some Bundesliga games and already it was not great, but it was a bit better, you know. I won some rating, which was, you know, a couple of weekends, you know, I'm winning rating, you know, didn't happen last year. So let's see.
When you say tough, right? And you mentioned there are these kids who are your daughter's age. So tough, you mean like they are coming and they are underrated? Or you mean they have more energy and they are playing different chess than it was 10 years ago? What's there?
No, of course, they are playing completely different chess. But this is okay. I mean, this is... I feel this is fine because, you know, they are very good in calculations, but have more experience, so I can fight. But also, I feel in most of the cases, they are a bit underrated, or maybe I'm overrated, but I don't know. There is something to find there. So this European Championship was really tough, but that was not the only bad tournament I had. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I don't feel bad. I mean, when I'm playing, I'm feeling like like enough energy, especially now the time control are shorter. So it's, I feel it's good for me because I can keep the concentration and my level of energy for not, you know, 8 hours, but 5-6 hours I can manage without, I'm blundering more than before, of course, more than when I was 2700. Those days are gone, but I still believe I can be a bit, I can be above 2600. But let's see, maybe I'm just...
What about 27? It's already gone?
27 is gone, yeah. It's gone. 27 is too difficult. You need to put all your energy into the game, and I'm not doing that anymore. I'm coaching, I'm doing some videos.
Yeah.
I used to do podcasts. So
yeah,
no, you have to focus. I mean, if you want to be 2700, you have to focus
all in, yeah,
on your, yeah, all in your game. Actually, when I was 2700, I started to work for Magnus, but that was different because it was also very useful for me. So I could play some games with him, and also I was, of course, mainly checking openings, but then I could play those openings, so I was kind of, you know, it was good for my pipe, actually.
We'll get there in a moment. There are many questions I have to ask, but one thing that's very interesting for me to ask you, when did you feel decline of your energy? When it was like when you were feeling your peak, you are having energy, calculating everything fast, and suddenly you felt you are not remembering your variations easy, you are getting tired. Do you remember the age where you started to feel this?
No, because I had my peak quite late, actually. I became 27 when I was 28, 29, and I kept that level for 5 years. But it was too much energy. I mean, like, it was tough. I felt, you know, one turning point, strangely enough, when I played one Grand Prix, because FIDE Grand Prix, when it was in Paris, it was 2012. Mm-hmm. And I was playing all these guys, you know, Nakamura, Maxime, I think, was playing Zakichuk and so on. I mean, like Ding, Wang Hao. And I felt, you know, I was giving all, you know, all my energy, all my prep. I was really going there very, very seriously. And for them, I felt, you know, it was just another day at the office. And, you know, I scored -2 and I felt, okay, I cannot do much better than that, than my level of energy, my prep, my, you know, what you put into the game. And for them, you know, it's just another day. I mean, another tournament, nothing special. And I felt, okay, these guys are just much better than me. So, yeah, to keep 2700 was not easy, and I had to put all my energy there. So it was really my, I felt, you know, it was my peak. And slowly, I mean, at some point, you just, you have a bad year or something. I mean, 2016 for me was really bad year. I lost like 50 points. And then it was very difficult to come back. I did some different stuff as well, more coaching, more, you know. But yeah, the energy is very difficult. It's very hard to say during the games if... Yeah, no, it's very difficult. I don't have the feeling that I remember less, because now there is more to remember, so it's normal to forget more than back in the days, you know. So there is much more to remember, but I don't feel my memory is weaker now than 10 years ago. Though before, you know, this is maybe a sign, I used to not to write down anything. So I will tell you, we record the podcast tomorrow, 1 p.m. It's fine. I will remember. So next week, you know, I don't know if you are, if you are doing that, 10 a.m., I have this, then I'm playing tennis, and I didn't write anything, but then I noticed that I'm forgetting things, so I started to write down.
No, if I don't write, it will be a big mess, because like on my case, it's not just the gym, this, but there are meetings, these tasks, I have that call. Also, our team is international, so lots of things. So it's all my Google Calendar is there. So whenever there is something, can we do something next month? I'm like, give me a moment. I open the calendar.
I lost this ability to, you know, to have one calendar in my head. I could decide everything. But it came slowly, and also there is a bit of deflation. So I mean, I guess it's fair.
Well, it's not fair your rating to me. Like, what's that? Yeah. Your rating is almost like mine. So if you play 10 games match, I should score four rating points, not two rating points. I cannot score four rating points against you.
No, but the problem is that if you are, I mean, there is a problem with the rating system. I think if you are inactive, you should lose rating simply.
Mm. You want me to get 2300, rating. Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I think in any sport, in tennis, if you don't play, you are zero. So I think this is very unfair. I mean, look at Kasparov. I mean, if he would come back tomorrow, he would be one number two. I with all due respect to the great,
yeah,
Garry Kimovic. I mean, I don't think his level is anywhere close to one number two at the moment we speak. So that's a problem with the rating system. I think. I think it's pretty clear. So if you play, you lose rating. That's a point.
Yeah, I'm smart. I'm not playing.
Yeah.
Lorenzo, the tournament at Grand Prix, that you felt that all pressure and you felt your opponents are taking things much easier with less energy. So was it a pivotal moment for you to ease your transition to be a second and coach the top players?
No, it came. Yeah, maybe. It came by accident, actually. Magnus invited me to a camp. Mm-hmm. In 2013, so he was trying to build a team, you know, for his match against Anon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it was very difficult to say no, you know, like, okay, you have this guy who is 28, he was 28-82, I think, at that point. I mean, he was clearly the new, I mean, everyone could guess that he would be dominating for quite some years, so just out of curiosities and then he asked me to help for the match. I had already an experience before in 2008 with Kamnik, because Kamnik, I started to work in early 2007, but that was very simple because he lived in Paris, so we would just meet, and it makes perfect sense because we are not far, and he wants to have old generation. Yeah, you have a board and you are moving pieces. Sometimes you enter lines in the computer, but mainly you are just moving pieces with the guy. And that was a very important step for me. I didn't get 2700 right away, but a couple of years later, I became in 2010. You know,
so you think there is a big influence with working with Kramnik, yeah?
No, of course, for sure.
Tell me more about this period before we jump to the years you work with.
Yeah, so I started in 2007, and basically every day we would be free, so it means a lot. We would meet in the afternoon and till evening, and then start move the pieces, check some lines. But you know, when you are checking lines with Kamnik, it's not only about opening; it's about middle game, and sometimes, of course, about end games. For instance, if you check the Berlin end game,
yeah,
I mean, it's sometimes. I mean, he's going very far in his prep. Even in that period, he was going really, really, very far. So, I mean, this Petrov trying to make a draw, you know, like till the end. So that was very interesting. And I, of course, I learned a lot from him. I mean, like, it's very clear that it was, I mean, he was world champion at the time. So,
it would be different story, right? If you were most of the time you spent with Engine, because it seems you are more
making peacemaking on
the board. Actually. You feel this understanding. It's not just engine, robotic.
I learned the concept of poor move, you know. I was offering some move and I said, it's poor. And, you know, I said, why is poor? I said, because it's poor. Because it doesn't feel right, you know. And I started to get it, yeah. I mean, like, okay, this is like you, the guy plays bishop g5, you go h6, yeah. This is poor, you know. This is not great. I mean, this is very basic, yeah. So not sophisticated. So overall, I didn't feel it at that time, but I guess I was a 2650 player. And then in 2010, slowly, I became, for the first time, I crossed 2700. So I guess, I mean, it's for sure had some influence. Also, I improved my opening repertoire. I mean, that's for sure, because we were checking his lines, but we were talking, you know, you are talking this line, what do you think, and so on, yeah? So that was really... very, very interesting. Unfortunately, then I kept working with him, and then we had this match. I mean, he had this match in 2008 against Anand, where he asked me to help him, which was logical because we would just work on a regular basis. But I was not working with him. I was more of, I was not working for him. I was not helping him during tournaments. I would just meet him in Paris during those years. But there he asked me to help him, and everything went wrong there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, like, even the prep before the match, I mean, to me, it seemed all very weird what we were doing. But, I mean, actually, it was a guy who beat Kasparov. And, you know, I was very young at that time, so I just, let it go. We didn't know what he was going to play. I mean, it was all very weird. He was spending a lot of time on Petrov while Anand went 1-d4. Then in this Meran, I didn't know he was going to play this Bishop D3 Meran, which I think was very poor choice because this is the style of Anand. I mean, like, you put some very complicated position.
Luvan, when you say everything went wrong, you mean not just chess wise, right? Just overall the structure, atmosphere.
Yeah,
you didn't know.
I mean, we
what's
were not ready, and we didn't have any ideas, and it was always the whole strategy was kind of weird. And then, but it can work. I mean, and then we got a bit unlucky because we received some idea in game three. Actually, Anand. I mean, for the people who are watching game three. Okay, I'm talking about these matches. You know, I did as a second six. Well, it's very funny because I did six World Championship matches. I can tell you, I can talk about all the games.
You will remember all the games?
Oh, for sure. In 2008, I will remember all the games. You know, I mean, not move by move, maybe, but the opening I can say and what happened.
Yeah, you know the story, what happened there.
But I cannot remember a single game of me. In 2008. I mean, don't ask me. I mean, even the tournament I played, I cannot remember. Because this, I mean, you spend like 3-4 months preparing, then you have this match, a lot of pressure, you know, it's a World Championship match, you are watching the game, and then you remember all your life. Yeah, it's memories for, I mean, like, it's really memories for life, you know, because I grew up with this Kasparov Cup of matches, and, you know, for me, it was kind of a big
game.
So to be part of this, you know, as close as I could be, it was really fantastic. So game three was this Meran, this bone variation, where Anand actually played the losing line. I mean, the line he played is just losing by force, actually. But they missed it. And, Kamnik was surprised, didn't find the reputation, lost. And then the next game, they played the right line, so we were again surprised. So it was a disaster overall. So he lost game three and game five as white. And, okay, there is 12 games, yeah? He lost game 6 as well, so halfway it was already -3, and it was a disaster. So I think everything went wrong. And also, Anand played brilliantly, while Kamnik was not in his best shape, but I think he made a mistake when he was choosing his opening lines. Because
how did it happen that you didn't know that what he is going to play?
Yeah, he was not sharing.
Who was then in the team also beside you?
Leko and Rublevski.
He was not sharing with any of them, or he was not sharing with...
With me, he was doing some lines. With Leko, he was doing some other lines. He was also working quite a lot on his own. So you don't know. I mean, during the night, he's not really sleeping. Yeah, he's working, even during the match, which I don't know. For me, it's weird.
Yeah.
Okay. You have to keep your energy as... I mean, I wouldn't do that, but... he likes to do that. Kasparov used to do that as well, as far as I know. So, yeah, overall, everything went wrong. I mean, Anand fully deserved to win. So I don't know if, even if the prep would be brilliant, maybe he would have lost anyway. So maybe that was just a bad match. Also, he kind of resigned halfway, you know. I mean, my feeling, because I remember this... he's on -3, so there is 6 games to go, and we are checking Slav. Because we are black, we are checking Slav. Okay. how is it a plan to win a game, or how does that work? So I say, like, okay, maybe we should check something more, you know, more double-edged. I mean, with more winning chances. And then he told me, you want me to lose one more game? And no, I don't want, but yeah, okay. Mm. So, you know, I mean, after yeah. six games, it was clear that he gave up. He gave up on the match, which was, of course, I think Magnus would never do that. I mean, to talk about the neck. So it was, yeah, when I agreed to have this match with Magnus, I mean, to help him, and it was also a bit of, you know, a bad experience in the World Championship match as a second, I felt, okay, let's get as well a rematch, yeah?
And especially with Anand, yeah?
Yeah, especially with Anand, yeah? And okay, the most important is to choose your horse, yeah? Your player, yeah? Actually, because Magnus, I mean, the prep was not great, but he was so much better than... do you know, it was the start of the World Championship matches, and Peter Heine Nielsen decided, he promised to announce that he would not help against him in the first match. So he was not there. Because Nielsen was helping Anand till 2012, and then he moved to Magnus. Mm-hmm. But the deal was that he wouldn't help Magnus if Magnus would qualify for the match. So it was very, you know, we were there with Hammer, Jan-Ludwig Hammer and Elianov. But Magnus was not too interested in the prep, to be honest. I mean, he wanted to have something to play as black. He was worried as black, you know, not to get out of the opening. But as white, he felt, okay, let me just get something playable, equal. It's fine. I will do the rest. And he did. and he did the rest. I mean, it was very good. We did manage to... Okay, we had this Berlin as black. It was one Caro-Kann at the start, then Berlin, and then it went very well. And then it became more and more professional.
Lovin, why did he want you to be in the team? Was it because of your experience with Kramnik and also that you know more Berlin and you can help with black? Or he wanted just to have some nice guy around in the team? Why he picked you? Because there are not 10 people, yeah. Right? There's just few. Mm-hmm. Why you... What do you think?
I mean, like, I know they were checking this 2700 chess website, and they say, this guy, we can try, we can ask, no, yes, maybe.
I see.
And then they invited many, I know they invited quite some people to some camp, and then they chose, you know, why. I mean, like, it went, you know, this probably, you saw this 2 week to slow video.
Which one?
2 week to slow.
Uh-huh.
When he's telling me, did you see that?
No.
Ah, many of the listeners, I guess, saw it.
So tell us.
So there is a video on YouTube with like more than 10 million views. So many people are still talking about it. I mean, when
you're playing
me.
Blitz, like training match? Or
yeah,
what?
No, I'm playing just Blitz, random Blitz with him. And he's saying, 2 weeks too slow, 2 weeks too slow.
Okay.
And I am the guy who is 2 weeks too slow. And okay, it was at the start of the first camp. So, you know, I mean, the atmosphere was already fun. We played tennis. We had some fun. So, yeah, also, I had the experience. Also, I guess I was not... but later on, he took some people, some stronger people. I mean, I was not any kind of competition, yeah? So that's good as well, yeah? That you cannot... I mean, if you invite Caruana, for instance, I mean, it could be a problem later, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we got along very well together very quickly. And then he's very, when he's picking up some people, then he keeps, you know, in general, he's, you know, very reliable. I mean, Peter Heine is still working with him. So, yeah, when he keeps, I mean, it was always good. I mean, the work was already, it was always very, very nice. I was mainly in touch with his father, Henrik, who was always very, very nice to me.
Was there any moment where you were like regretted, like, what the hell I agreed to be here?
Okay, maybe 2016, when Kayakin's Kayakin match went wrong, when he lost the game. You know, because it's a lot. I mean, you stay there for quite a while. You have some camps. You know, it's a lot of energy. And we were staying. We had this very stupid idea to stay in Norway during the matches, the first few matches. We stay in Norway in November. You know, it's very cold. You don't see the light. You walk during the night. It's very tough when the guy is losing. He lost this game 8 to Kayakin. Then in game 9, he was basically very close to lost, 2 points down, but he managed to find a miracle defense. I think he was never completely, actually, he was never lost, but it was so close.
Mm-hmm.
And then he won game 10, then won the tiebreak. And then we had this brilliant idea. I mean, Gustafsson had this brilliant idea that we should be, you know, we should have a time defense. So a time defense with him, so we can walk during the day and we can have some sun. So we went to Thailand for the last couple of matches, and that was a brilliant idea because we could walk during the day and it was some sun. We could go to even to the beach after the prep. So it was really enjoyable. And we were ready. I mean, we were working much better, actually.
Wait. So, the team of who was helping him, you moved to Thailand.
Yeah, we went to. I mean, actually, Peter was the only one to go with him during the match. And you know now with remote internet and so on, we can walk from far. So also he likes. I mean, Magnus, he likes to be with, you know, non-chess people. During this match, because okay, you are just, it's a lot of tension. So if you go back home and you have people keep talking about chess,
yes, I understand.
I think yeah, it was a new way of doing it, and because with Kamnik, I was there in Bonn. You know, I think Kasparov, Karpov, they had all their seconds. You know, with them. I mean, like it was. So it was a new way, and now I think I saw some picture of. Team Gukesh, they were in Spain, yeah, during the match, the last match.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, now it's a new way of doing it, and I think it makes perfect sense, yeah. I mean, the seconds are in one place, you just travel with one of them. I mean, the main one, Peter, who is used to him. I mean, like, they know each other since Magnus is a kid, so they get along very well. And we are somewhere, and we had this. I mean, Gustafsson, I should give him a lot of credit that Thailand was a very good pick. And yeah, no, overall, it was very nice. Actually, because then from 2000, I think already 14, I started to work, you know, the whole year for Magnus. So, I mean, like every time he would play a tournament, I would be preparing with Peter the games and we would make some training camp. But, you know, I mean, like, let's say he was playing Vikanze every year. So Vikanze is like 3 weeks. But, you know, he doesn't like to think. He's thinking one game at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So he's playing at 1. So every day he's playing at 1 p.m. So finishing the game 6-7, then he has dinner. Then he's relaxing. Sometimes they were playing bridge, I think, with the family. So they are playing beach, so he doesn't want to talk about chess. So with Peter, we talk a bit. We think, maybe tomorrow, maybe Neidorf would be a good idea. Yeah. So Neidorf or this. So then Magnus is ready to talk about chess at, let's say, 10 p.m. So we give our ideas. Magnus thinks in a completely different direction. So he said, like, tomorrow I'm going to play the French. I mean, very random. He says something which sounds very random to us, but okay. So this is what he wants to do. And then you have to produce some work between, let's say, 10 p.m. and 11 a.m. And I'm in Paris. So I have to produce like at least 6-7 hours of work, you know, to make all. So it's not fun. I mean, it's not that part of the job. I was not really enjoying. After 10 years, I spent 10 years, but the matches were nice because we would meet, would do some camp. We would create some new ideas, some new even concepts at times, revisit openings. So that was very nice. That was very interesting, very creative, very nice. While doing tournaments, it was more, try to make this work and, we have a problem here, so we should solve it. But you cannot create an opening in, an idea. I mean, it's very difficult, to create during the night. Yeah. So you just, you have a file. We have all the files and then we work on it. We try to improve. And we see the games which were played in which direction we should go. So that work was really the day-to-day work. It was not really exciting, And the computer becoming stronger and stronger, you just become a penguin, as Peter. you just push. I mean, we know because we have experience, so we know where to go. But there is no real. Learning process in that. So this is
completely different, what you were doing with Kramnik, 2008, moving pieces, building chess, learning, and then now you are the Stockfish guy or AlphaZero guy, clicking the button.
After I decided not to defend this title, I mean, I finished my contract, which finished actually in December 2022, and I said, okay, thank you so much for everything. That was really nice, but without the matches, I mean, I feel I should something different.
Would you still think if someone invite you to specifically World Championship match?
For sure.
But not second of being engine guy.
No, I don't know. It's different. Yeah, now I'm coaching, for instance, this guy, Maurizi. Marc-André Maurizi was world junior champion, one of the best, not the best French hope, that's for sure. He can do, but it's completely different because we would do some camps, so we would sit in front of each other. We are talking like now, I was talking to him yesterday evening, he's playing right now in Italian Championship, so we would talk on a daily basis, but it's more exchange, how do you see it and what we should. So, yeah, that is very interesting, but my task is different. We go through his games, we discuss, and so on. Yeah, I mean, the problem is that when I started my work with Magnus, he was 28-80. So what can, I mean, like, what should I tell him? I mean, like, play faster, be careful in middle games, you tend to forget about...
we need to work on this weakness.
Your dynamic. I mean, his main weakness was always his dynamic positions. He was not always great. That's why maybe I think he's. Let's say, for instance, he's much better in one e5. In this Spanish, I think he lost his last game in one e4 e5. He lost his last game in 2017.
Wow! Really?
Yeah. He didn't lose for so long. So he doesn't lose, he doesn't win. I mean, he wins some games, but very few. I mean, classical, you can check. I think the last game was against Kramnik, it was 2017. I think Kramnik, anyway, stopped in 18, but it was 17, I think. So he didn't lose for... And he played it in a match, against Nepo. And for instance, he's more of... for me, he's more of a Spanish player than a Sicilian. He feels much more, he's better simply. I mean, and I think the numbers are there to prove my point. But in Sicilians, of course, he won more games, but lost some. So, overall, it's, my point is that what can I tell him to improve his game? Yeah, I mean, it's so difficult. Yeah, I mean, like, he's so good that, and he knows exactly after the game what he did wrong. Yeah, he's very objective. So he knows what he did wrong and he has an idea of how to improve it and so on. Yeah, so...
So like kind of he was his main coach, yeah?
We are just checking, openings and because he's not really interested in that part of...
Lovan, I think that there are lots of things that one can learn from Carlsen. From if you just spend chess-wise, right? Chess understanding, opening, self-criticism, and many other things, like, not chess-wise, more life-wise, what were the characters or traits that you admire and kind of you consciously or unconsciously you took to your life?
Yeah, first of all, it was, I must say that contrary to Kamnik, he was a good leader. I mean, like a natural one, you know, of the team. So, you know, he was always very, you know, he could, you know, when we lost, let's say, sometimes it's long, you know, this tank, everyone gets tired, you know, so you want to do something. But he found the words, you know, to motivate everyone and to be nice to everyone. Never complains about anything because he knows it's tough. He never complained about us publicly or privately, never, because he knows we are doing our best and it's not that easy. So he's really a natural leader of the team. Also this, I mean, but this you cannot really learn, this will to win at everything. Yeah, he has this will, this incredible. He wants to win all the time at everything, and it's just amazing, yeah.
Including when you are playing bridge or poker in the evening, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now you play some tennis game, you know, nobody cares, but yeah, he cares a lot. At some point, the only time he was pissed at me, it was we were playing basketball. And I was playing with him, and Ding was invited, and Ding was playing with Peter. I was playing with him, and Ding was too fast for me. I mean, I couldn't stop him.
Really? So,
yeah, no, he's very good at basketball. Yeah, Ding. He's playing like a few times a week. Is what he told us. So yeah, so he was. I mean, I'm terrible at. I don't like basketball. I'm playing tennis. I'm more. Like you give me a racket and a ball and I'm happy, but I don't play basketball, so I was a bit forced to play basketball, and he was passing me all the time. Yeah, so yeah, at some point he told me, okay, you cannot be beaten all the time, so now you have to fight, do better. Yeah, so he was really annoyed. Yeah, then he apologized later on. Yeah, that he was shouting at me basically. Yeah, I mean, like I cannot do that. Yeah. So this is funny, yeah? I mean, because, no, he's a great fighter, yeah? He wants it. And you can feel it, yeah? During his games. And when you see him, that he's just fighting till the end. And he's just, yeah, he's amazing for that, yeah? Never gives up. And always, you know, even, also, yeah, one last thing. Even when it's great, you know, when everything is going, you know, fantastic. Sometimes it's played fantastic tournament and, you know, scoring plus five, plus six, but always he would tell you there's things to improve and so on. So even when things are doing great, he says, okay, I can do even better. So let's focus on what went wrong. And that's amazing because all of us, when, you know, if I would have, you know, 1% of his career, I would think, oh, I'm so great. But no, he's just thinking on how to improve when it goes bad, but when it goes well and even extremely well. So that's desire to improve constantly. So that's amazing.
Wow. It's so interesting when in a recent interview with Aurelian, we were talking about what are the things that he was missing to go to the next level. Leadership was one of the things. He said that he had challenge how to work with his seconds, how to work with the team, how to go himself further, but also motivate the team, keep things together.
Yeah, no, at some point I clearly remember in Spain, you know, it was the last match, 2021, and we were in Spain, it was very hot, and we are playing Nepo. I mean, with all due respect to Nepo, we all felt in the team, okay. I mean, we think he's going to win, yeah. Basically. I mean, I always felt he was going to win, but I mean, before Caruana in 2018, we felt okay. Caruana was playing very well at that time. They were very close in terms of rating. So, okay, that's the only match, you know, I felt, okay, it might be close, who knows, it might go on. I mean, like, because Caruana in classical, okay, we had such an edge because in case of 6-6, it would be tiebreak. It's what happened in the end. And then in Rapid and Blitz, Magnus was, and still is, so much stronger than Caruana, but at that time, it was really not even close, yeah. But against Nepo, we felt, okay, we have, okay, should be fine, yeah. But then he found, yeah, really, I remember one evening when he described everyone and he had kind words for everyone. And also kind words, but also what you wanted to hear, yeah, as a person, yeah, as a second. So what was your, let's say, he was doing, I remember the Norwegian TV was there and he gave, you know, he described everyone and it was really what you wanted to hear. Yeah, exactly. So some motivation, you know, and some great leadership that everyone is in the team. Everyone wants him, of course, to win and so on. Yeah, so he's naturally a great leader. While Kamnik, I mean, I heard many stories from other seconds. He was complaining from the morning. Yeah, I mean, like, he was complaining basically all the time. No, but I can understand. I mean, it's very stressful, and he was a different Kamnik, you know, when I was visiting him in Paris. He was always very friendly, and it was always very nice. And really, I mean, like, great guy. I mean, like, nothing to complain about. But when the match was getting closer and closer, he became, you know, like very nervous and, you know, very tough with everyone. And during the match was really, I mean, we
peak,
would
yeah.
See, yeah, we would see him like 5-10 minutes a day. He would come, complain, and saying that we are just terrible, and that and so on, and and go back to his home, and saying that we should not sleep. You know, he feels better if you don't sleep. Yeah, that's his big. You know, he feels that. If you don't sleep, it means that you did everything right. I mean, like, you did everything possible for the game. But actually, you get tired. I mean, and the work is not great. I mean, because you don't sleep, simply. I mean, so you
yeah.
Can't sleep during... I mean, it doesn't work this way. Yeah? So, but yeah, tough. I heard some... Yeah, once as this... So, yeah, as this story. So, I go to his room. And I have something because he gave me something to check. Also, you have zero creativity with Kamnik. I mean, you can have creativity because he gives you lines to check. So you cannot come up with a new line. I mean, like, he just gives you a line, position on move 10, you have to check this position. Okay, so you check this position. So I come back to his room. I say, it's very interesting. You know, he plays this. And then it's unclear, but very playable. And he looks at me like, but you know, Kasparov once told me that when it's unclear, it means that not enough work was done, because a game of chess has always a clear result. It's you win, you make a draw, or you lose. So when it's unclear, it means you didn't work enough. It's what Kasparov told me, and I think he was right. So I left and I went back to my room, and I worked. I went, you know. I went deeper and deeper, yeah, but overall, I didn't, it was much more, you could be much more creative with Magnus. He was really open to everything, yeah, and changing his openings and so on, yeah. Because Kamnik just tells you, I want to play Petrov, I want to play knight f6, e6 against d4, c4, I want to play 1d4, I don't want to play Nimzo, I want to play this, I want to play that. So he's very clear in his mind what he's going to play. And you cannot do... I mean, you don't even discuss it, yeah?
Yeah, so you made very interesting transitions from being a professional chess player yourself and being a second, and I guess now being a coach is a bit different, and especially when you are not training someone 28-80,
yeah.
And you have things to teach, and it seems to me that as a coach to strong players who are 26 above, it seems you are like one of the best possible people you can be in the world who have such an experience, because you have been 2700 yourself, you have worked with top players like this, and there is so much you can bring to them. So you are now, it seems you are the first kind of, as a profession, yeah, like playing second and now coach, yeah, and it seems you are now in your best place.
Yeah, I don't know. I did also some. I was working for Chess 24, you know, in French. I was the head of Chess 24 in French, and that was during the COVID period, so the lockdown period. So that was also very exciting. I was commentating daily, you know, mainly in French. I mean, like 98% of the time in French. I did that for 3 years. It was also very exciting. So now it's, I mean, the company was bought by Chess.com. And now they are doing, I mean, they had already their team in French, yeah? So it was a bit complicated. But I still do some live commentary, which I love. I mean, I like to share my, you know, I like to watch games and to talk about it. So, and to share to as many people as possible. So I also like to share with more people. So I mean, like, as a coach, I mean, yeah, I feel I'm useful to Maurizi these days, but I also have some weaker guys. And also I can add some young people, which they became I am. And I feel like if you are a motivated young guy, I mean, I can make sure you will become an AM as well. And I feel actually maybe I'm more useful for 2300 player, because I can, their weakness, you know, it's much more difficult with Maurizi, because, you know, I start to, after 1 year, I start to, you know, after moving on, it's much more difficult when you have a very strong player to,
yes, of course,
to see his weakness, yeah?
Yes,
of course. When I have weaker guys, I mean, it's very easy for me to see immediately what's wrong in their games. While with now, Maurizi, but it's also, I mean, everything is really, anyway, very interesting. So I don't know. I know it's another, you know, it's another life. But when you're a coach, it reminds me of, you know, when you're a coach, it means you are not good enough to do it yourself. Yeah. I mean, you're coaching too. I mean, it's how it is. Yeah. You're not good enough to do it yourself. So yeah, it's a bit, and I remember something I was saying, and now imagine my level, I'm coaching some coach, yeah, to become coach. So I'm not good enough to be a player. I'm not good enough to be a coach, but I'm good enough to be a coach for the future coach. So
well, the idea of, like, if you're coaching, then you cannot do it yourself as a player, yeah, makes sense, because you don't have that energy or that things to put that, but you have knowledge. But coach as a coach, I think it's like
I just one last point, yeah, what I wanted to make, that I think it's very important to be, as you said, you know, I was a 2700 player. Sure, I worked with many different people, but, you know, the game is changing so much. I mean, computer is changing. Your players, you know, I call them I forgot. I had one kid. I started to work with one kid at some point. Really, I mean, a young French kid who was a world champion under 10, I think, or 8 even. This is the Puzzle Rush generation, you know. They see tactics. So, I mean, like, and so it's very, you know, they see Puzzle Rush, you know, like, tack, tack, tack. You know, they see small tactic in very quick. I mean, you would be surprised. I mean, this kid from, I mean, I don't know if you are training your tactics, but if you do a Puzzle Rush with him, I mean, it wouldn't be, you know, easy work if you didn't train. Yeah, because there are so, this tactic in one second, they see it instantly, yeah?
Yeah,
so the Puzzle Rush generation. So you don't have to lose. I still want to play a bit, just not to lose, you know, this when you give advices, you know, to be still in touch with the game, yeah, or to remember. That's why I like to play Bundesliga. For instance, I didn't play much, but I played some rapid, and I also played Bundesliga. But it's important to keep preparing, you know, to have this, because when I'm playing
when I'm preparing for the opponents of Maurizi, I'm not playing the game then. So this is a completely different, you know, say, oh, this is fine for you, you can play. But you are not sitting there, yeah? So it's a completely different experience. Yeah. So you still have to keep, I believe, it is my feeling that...
Look, when you're playing...
Playing to, you know, to not to forget, because you can easily forget how tough it is, and it keeps moving. That's for sure. I mean, the style now, they calculate like beast. They, you know, we would think all generation, oh, this piece is well placed, you know. Let's put, my knight would be nice on d5 and so on. But they don't do that anymore. I was talking, actually, like you were talking with Saonian, I went to this freestyle chess in Paris a couple of years ago, and I was talking to Kasim Janov, who is also a very... a great player, and there was also a very experienced coach. I think he's with Abdou Satorov there. And he told me, like, for exactly where this conversation that for our generation, it's just a completely different game. Yeah. I mean, they now calculate like monsters.
So now, when you're playing Logan with others, especially with the younger generation, do you play different chess? Do you play different openings, try to get positions where it's more experienced, or you just go as you were going before?
No. I mean...
Do you adapt, like?
I try to adapt and to find the weak points of my opponents. But I don't like when... If it's only... I mean, if I play young guys and it's only about calculations, I don't like my chances. So I would... I'm not going, you know... sometimes I know one move is a bit worse, maybe, or I feel one move is a bit worse, but I don't necessarily play the best move, which I think, I mean, like, of course, which I think, I mean, the move which I think is the best move, I would play, you know, more going for the end game or, you know, more conservative.
And are you excited about chess 960 booming?
Yeah,
do you think it to be more popular, so it will be easier for you?
I think it's very bad for me, but
why do you think it's very bad for you?
I'm an expert of openings, yeah, so I can sell my knowledge in openings. So there's no more openings there, so I don't think it's a good news. Is it booming? I think it's nice to play. I think it's stable to watch, but. I don't know. I don't watch the openings, for instance, because, okay, they play a move like, even me, I cannot stand it. I mean, like, the first few moves, they play a move every 5-10 minutes. So it's a bit long. The rapid is quite exciting, but when it comes to time travel, then it becomes normal. And it's nice. I think it might be a game for top players. Yeah, sure. Maybe. But for, let's say, amateurs, for 99.9% of people, I mean, chess is complicated enough, I believe. So why to...
overcomplicate it?
and I think you have this, you know, you have this... when people are watching, I think they feel, Magnus played my opening today. Let's have a look, you know? It's very exciting. I mean, like, it's nice. I mean, I believe... There is this
interesting point. Yeah.
There is this amateur thing, you know, you are playing some line all your life, and then suddenly a top guy is playing your opening. Yeah.
Oh, Magnus played London.
Magnus played London. Let's see if I can reproduce that. And you don't have this in, you cannot, you know, you have this.
You cannot
relate, yeah, to what he did. And because if you don't do the same than Magnus in the opening, where are you going to do it? I mean, you're not going to win the same end game or something like that. So, I can be completely wrong, and I wish. I mean, don't misunderstand me. I mean, like this two and where I went there, it's just fantastic, and there is a lot of I mean, the place was really nice. The playing hall is fantastic. There is some fight
energy, excitement.
Influencers, the best influencers, they are trying something new. And I wish them all the best. I mean, like, that's 100% for sure. Do I believe in it? No, but yeah, sometimes I could be wrong. I mean, like, I could easily be wrong. So I don't know. I mean, for me, it's just I think it's nice to play, but to watch, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Logan, the last question I ask our guest is about the advice they will share with amateurs. Most of our listeners now are amateurs who are loving the game and want to improve. So you have lots of experience with chess improvement. People have limited time and they want to improve, but also they have this how to do that, the mindset issues. Your advice?
Oh, it very much depends, but depends. But at the very low level, I'm completely sure that tactics is a basic. Yeah, you do tactics. I mean, you do tactics every day, daily. Yeah, you, if you have 15 minutes to give to chess, let's say every day, do tactics, keep sharp.
Until,
you know,
what
sharp
level
mind.
You mean about? Like until what? Like until 1500?
Yeah, maybe even more. 1600,
maybe even more. Yeah,
1700. And then do enjoy, yeah? I mean, like, that's the main point. Yeah?
Enjoy,
Enjoy the game. Do whatever. If you'd like to do openings, I mean, of course, you may blunder later, but if you improve your chance, you know, if you have a good position after the opening, if you play a guy from the same level, you improve your chance of winning, yeah? Because you have a better position, so it will be 70-30 instead of being 50-50. So if you have something in openings, then sure, go. If you like end games, then go. If you like old games, yes, and sure, middle games, and I think everything, any kind of chess is useful. But the best, then if you're a bit stronger, then it's even better than tactics. It's what I tell to my pupils, actually. I think the best exercise is not to... The problem with tactic is that you know there is a solution. So that's the main problem. So... For me, the best exercise and the most fun was to watch. You just watch some game live, Carlsen, Aronian, for instance. You watch some game. You just switch off everything, engine, of course, commentator, and you think by yourself. And you write down what you see, and then you check it. And you are like in the game, yeah? And it's also fun because do you get the move? You don't get the move. Then you go from Aronian perspective, let's say, and then from Magnus perspective. And then you think by yourself and nobody is telling you, because during the game, nobody is telling you if there is a tactic or if there is not a tactic. So that's the fun part. So you watch some game and you also think by yourself during that game. And you don't know if there is a solution, if you miss something or not. And then, of course, you analyze and you are trying to check what you missed, what you did correctly, and so on. And this is fun, and you are also in the, you know, in a, it's a good training because your games will be the same. Yeah, every 5-10 minutes a move will come, and so on. So that's an exercise which I love, but... For weaker, as I said, tactics are very important.
Similar to that training, you know, with how I was training myself, when I would take a book, it can be classical book or it can be best games or Gelfand. So before going with the book and where everything is commented and analyzed, so I would find a game on Chessbase. I would close the notation on Chessbase. I would put a board with me. And then you click the right mouse, it shows what white played. So, for example, Gelfand is playing for black. Okay, after the opening, I would start to kind of play the game, put my moves in the notation. Wherever it was like something else and it was played, then I would come back and to check. And then I would go back with the book, check what happened, etc.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I would just dive into the game myself first, feel the game.
Yourself.
And then check what happened, actually, the comments, why did that sense, and on.
Anything which makes me, which makes you think by yourself and preferably not knowing there is a solution, there is a tactical solution.
At Chessmode, one of the features we are making is people will be able to pick topics and it will be not just tactics. They can pick tactic, strategy, attack and defense, and they don't know what is it. It's tactic.
Ah, it is. They don't know, yeah. Okay.
They know that it can be a tactic, but it might be a positional. It might be just defense. Nice. So it's mixed. It's not just tactic. So, Logan, thank you very much for coming. And
thank
also,
you.
Thank you.
You
very
and
much.
Thank you very much
for inviting me, for making my 10 best games, you know.
Yes, that's the other thing I wanted to gratitude, say share gratitude.
Yeah, no, but you know, generally speaking, I have one more story. You know, in 2014, I won a nice tournament in Sigerman, mm-hmm. in Malmö, and some guy asked me for an interview, so I said, sure. And he told me, oh, congratulations, how did it go with your tournament? Okay, so I start to tell about my tournament. And then the next 9 questions was about Magnus. My training with Magnus. So I understood that it's not me as a player I was interested. I mean, like, people shouldn't talk to me because I can play a good game. But it's only because they're curious about Magnus, which is very understandable. I mean, he's definitely top 3 of all time, maybe 1, maybe 2, maybe 3, but he's really already a legend of the game. So this is very, very normal. So I was very surprised that someone is asking me to show me my 10 best games. And I was, it brought back some really
nice
good
memories.
And I enjoyed to do it. And your team was very nice to me. So congratulations. You have a good team. You're a good leader. You can see. If you have a good team, it means you are a good leader. So you have a good team.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I tried a lot not to go with the standard ways that how many entrepreneurs goes, because I know that at the end, it's not the goal. It's the journey we all go together. So if you are going this journey together, let's have nice team. Let's have a nice time.
Yeah,
have team with whom you want to have also drink or walk. Yeah. So I'm happy everything went well. And I was very impressed with your comments, how live it was, how brilliant was the explanation, your energy, your vibes there. So I was like, Dave, can you ask Laurent for the podcast? So thank you very much for that. And I hope our listeners will like it. And the link, guys, will be just under the description. And you can check Laurent's best 10 games and dive into his mind.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, my friend. All the best.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Champions, thank you for trusting your time to listen to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it and found something to take with you both for your chess journey and your life. If something stood out or made you think, I would love to hear it. Drop in the comments, please. And if you have not yet, please subscribe to the channel so you don't miss the next episode. Stay awesome. Until next time, my friend.